And the pipeline's here. The tribal chairman of Fond du Lac is here. And, you know, a whole host of, you know, native and non-native people. And there are a lot of people that just, you know, do not believe that this should happen anymore in this country, that are very willing to put themselves on the line. Non-Indian people, you know, as well as tribal members. And they are here. And it is a beautiful place to defend.
For people who are watching in New York and Louisiana, in California and India, China and South Africa, why does this matter to them?
This matters because it's time to move on from fossil fuels. You know, this is the same battle that they have everywhere else. You know, each day or each week, there's some new leak. There's some new catastrophe in the fossil fuel industry, you know, as well as the ongoing and growing catastrophe of climate change.
That was Winona LaDuke, longtime Anishinaabe activist from White Earth Reservation, Northern Minnesota. This is Democracy Now!
Democracy Now! Is on every morning on KBOO Portland. Good morning. It's 8 o'clock and More Talk Radio is up next.
KBOO would like to thank our community partners that donated food for our volunteers today. Breakfast was provided by Bread and Ink Cafe, a breakfast and brunch venue located at 3610 Southeast Hawthorne Boulevard. Lunch was provided by Frank's Noodle House, whose specialty is La Mian, or Chinese hand-pulled noodles, and are located at 822 Northeast Broadway Street. Dinner was provided by New Taste of India, a food cart at 1810 Southwest 4th Avenue, serving North Indian dishes including lamb, chicken, and vegetarian choices.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Gaining Ground, a feature-length documentary telling the stories of farmers who are making profound changes in their farming practices. Gaining Ground will screen September 25th at the Hollywood Theater in Portland. From farms in the Willamette Valley to underserved communities of color in Richmond, California, Gaining Ground reveals the ingenuity and courage of urban and rural farmers committed to serving and empowering their communities. Again, that's Gaining Ground, a feature-length documentary showing September 25th at the Hollywood Theater, 4122 Northeast Sandy Boulevard in Portland. More information is available at kboo.fm on the right-hand side of the homepage under Community Events.
Morning. This is More Talk Radio on your community radio station, KBOO. My name is Cecil Prescott, and I'll be joined by my co-host, Celeste Carey, in a moment. This morning, we will have a conversation with Daniel L. Hatcher, who is the author of a recent volume entitled The Poverty Industry, The Exploitation of America's Most Vulnerable Citizens. This is Membership Drive, so we shall take short breaks in our interview so that you might call in at 877-500-5266 to become a member or to renew your membership. In his book, The Poverty Industry, Mr. Hatcher examines the way in which government and its partners fail to adequately address the needs of America's most vulnerable citizens. In it, he also offers some suggestions about how this system might be improved. Good morning, Mr. Hatcher.
Good morning. Thank you so much for having me on the show.
I want to let you know that we'll be taking breaks in about 5 minutes for a membership pitch, but we'll do that periodically throughout our interview. So apologies for that right now.
No problem at all.
Perhaps before we take our first break, you can tell us a little bit about why you wrote this book, and tell us why it's an important issue to address.
Sure. So the overarching theme of the book, the poverty industry, maybe stepping back in a bit initially to think about what an industry is, for which most of us think about it, regarding a grouping of companies that provide a similar service or product, thinking of possibly the coal mining industry. With the poverty industry, you have state governments and county government agencies, human service agencies, partnering with private companies where the vulnerable populations are treated as the revenue producer, as a source of funds, often mining for aid funds that are then diverted from children and the poor to general state coffers. So I've been working on poverty-related issues for over 20 years. One of my first jobs after law school was representing kids in the foster care system in Baltimore City. And it was overwhelming to me to see what children were going through both before foster care, while they're in the system, a largely broken system, unfortunately, and then the struggles as they age out of care. So the individual hardships, you know, were difficult enough, but then I started encountering examples where the agencies, the state agencies and the systems that were designed to protect and serve children's best interests were sometimes working against their best interests, sometimes even placing their own fiscal agency interests over the interests of the children. And I started digging, and that led to finding multiple examples, ultimately, to writing this book.
And this book isn't, maybe we should also say to our listener, this isn't an attack on the frontline caseworkers or those who are an advocate, nor are you advocating for a cut to funds for the poor. Is that correct?
That's correct, and I appreciate that comment. First, regarding frontline caseworkers, I do think the vast majority of frontline workers are trying their best to provide quality services to their clients, and they want to do the best work that they can. The caseworkers are often overworked, underpaid, and undersupported. I strongly believe that the facts, the research in the book, do not provide arguments to cut aid. The examples I discuss in the book, if you have aid funds that are being diverted by a governor to state general revenue, right? If the governor is misusing federal aid funds or other forms of resources that are supposed to be helping children and the poor, the answer is not to cut that aid that are needed by the vulnerable populations. The answer is to stop the misuse.
Exactly. So tell us just briefly, we have about 2 minutes, about this triangle of interest which create this poverty industry.
Sure. So an iron triangle is a political a construct that was used often in discussion of what was termed the military-industrial complex and the relationship between the various levels of government and private contractors regarding defense contracting. Now, with the poverty industry and the poverty-industrial complex, if you will, you have a similar iron triangle relationship, and you actually have some of the very same contractors involved, some of the companies that have been long involved in the military industrial complex, such as Lockheed Martin, Northrop Grumman. You know, they're also helping to provide child support services across the country.
We're speaking with Daniel Hatcher, author of The Poverty Industry, The Exploitation of American Most Vulnerable Citizens, here on your community radio station, KBOO. This is our membership drive, and we're going to take a break right now. And when we come back, we'll continue our conversation with Daniel Hatcher.
And good morning. Thank you for tuning in. I'm Linda.
And I'm Jenna.
We're here to talk to you about becoming a member. You know, if you're tuned in to Cecil, you may be one of his long-term regular listeners. Cecil and Celeste have regular listeners for sure for their program, and they bring you really important issues like this. The poverty industry. I don't think I would have ever heard about this anywhere else.
Oh, no.
Actually, not anywhere else. I want to let you know right now that for a minimum $75 pledge, you can get the book, The Poverty Industry. You can get it for yourself. You can get it for someone else. That's a really easy donation. Let's make that into, what's that for 12 months? What's a monthly donation of?
That's like math. I think that's like $7
a month. I know, I can't do the month, but it'd be easy to break it down.
It's about $7 a month. $78 a month. I mean, that's like nothing. That's not even what some people make more per hour.
Shoot, you know, sometimes when I go to get my coffee drink, it costs me $5 because I got soy and I got, you know, da-da-da. And, you know, so I can only do that now and then. But this is something that's really worth it. You're going to get everyday radio, you know, for your investment. You get radio every day. You get public affairs in the morning. You get music in the evening. You get other public affairs in the early evening. You get great shows like Cecil and Celeste Talk Show, and I know many of you probably call in as well to talk to the authors that they have. If you're one of those people, call now this number, 877-500-5266. That's right. That's the number to call to become a member. If you've never become a member and you're listening to Cecil and Les, please do that right now. We really appreciate the new members. Once again, it's 877-500-5266.
And you know what I love about mornings on KBOO? It's just that mornings on KBOO, you actually get to hear about these types of topics where we find not just, oh, hey, let's just talk about a book. We're going to talk about the issues that the books are focused on. We're going to talk about the depths to which these issues are actually affecting the community here, locally, nationally. And, you know, and when we think about the poverty industry, I think here in Portland, we're seeing, you know, great changes that have been happening in the last few years. And I think everybody really understands where our society is right now. We have this great divide, and it really needs to be talked about. And you just feel the community want to talk about it. And where is it being talked about? Here on KBOO. And you can help join that conversation by giving us a call at 877-500-5266. Again, that's 877-500-5266. We have all sorts of people who are ready to take your call. And we know that, you know, you're listening because you want to be an informed citizen. You want to be an informed member of your community. And that's why you listen. That's why you appreciate what KBOO has to bring to you. Because you understand this is your democracy. This is your community. Even if you don't maybe necessarily feel the direct poverty industry of this book, you see it throughout your community, and you know it affects everybody. So give us a call, 877-500-5266. Show your support now.
And we're continuing our conversation as you go to your phone or your computer and become a member
or your cell phone
mm-hmm. become a member of this community radio station. We're continuing our conversation with Daniel Hatcher, author of The Poverty Industry. And when we took a break, Mr. Hatcher was explaining this iron triangle, the poverty industrial complex, if you will, that continues to keep people in poverty. You talk about several examples in your book, and from your background in foster care advocacy, you have some personal experience with people trapped within this system. Give us an example of how we're familiar with foster care system, but how does the money not come get to the children or use adequately?
How's it siphoned off? Yes.
Sure. So I think one of the most stark examples of the poverty industry practices is using foster children. And I've sent out several state Public Records Act requests, state FOIA requests, and obtained documents, including in the state where I both teach law school and practice law in Maryland. And you have state foster care agencies partnering with private revenue contractors that are literally seeking out foster children who might be eligible to receive disability or survivor benefits, so kids who are disabled or have dead parents, not in order to provide them with more services once they claim federal aid on those children's behalf, but to take the children's resulting disability and survivor benefits. Some states take even more. Oregon takes more, for example, which will also take veterans assistance benefits if a foster child has a parent who died in the military. Maryland, I've obtained, and in other states as well, I've obtained actual contract documents. And some of the documents, the language that's used, it's like children are plugged into conveyor belts, mining them for resources. There's a document regarding an initial contract between Maryland and a company by the name of Maximus that describes foster children as a revenue generating mechanism. But again, there, I think the frontline caseworkers in Maryland want to do the best work that they can. So these practices where the revenues are being diverted, where the aid funds are being diverted, is happening much higher up at the leadership level of the agencies and at the governor's office.
You mentioned using young people, children, and especially foster children and orphans as a revenue source, but you also, in your book, cover the elderly and poor. And I would like you to talk a little bit about how these all can kind of converge. How are the elderly and poor also used as revenue sources? And does that include some of our veterans as well?
Sure. So these practices, unfortunately, are wide-ranging. And maybe as a backdrop, I think it's helpful to understand, I think, why states are engaged in these sort of behind-the-scenes revenue schemes is that states across the country have been unwilling to raise sufficient revenue through general taxation, both red states and blue states, so they're looking for money wherever they can get it, and often in ways that are unknown to the public, including actually taking aid from children and the poor. With the elderly population, often Medicaid is a targeted funding source from the federal government that is then diverted from intended purpose. And these can be an example using nursing homes. And there's a wide variety of schemes that have been used that I discussed in the book that will target the federal Medicaid funds. So Medicaid is, the way it sometimes works, Medicaid is a matching grant program. So Maryland is easy to understand. We're a 50-50 match state. If Maryland spends $50 of state money on eligible services for an eligible older, you know, American who'd be eligible for the Medicaid-related services, then the state can claim a $50 match from the federal government. Oregon, I believe, is a 65% match rate, meaning that the federal government will match 65% to Oregon's 35%, so a little better in Oregon. But what you have is you have states that the initial spending is illusory. The state will move money around, so it's not actually spending any state money. They'll still claim the federal match to claim the federal aid intended for the vulnerable population. That in itself is concerning because it's illusory, but what concerns me even more is when you then have states taking that federal aid intended for Medicaid services and diverting it to either general revenue or to other purposes. Oregon was doing this for years using nursing homes, where it was diverting millions, hundreds of millions annually from intended care for the elderly, initially, I believe, to general revenue, and then targeted towards the public education program. And, you know, I'm a fan of public education. We need to fund our schools, but Medicaid funds are supposed to be for Medicaid services, not to fund the education program.
Which is frightening then, because the question then is, where are the funds for education going? If they're being diverted, where are they going? And is this yet another tie to this poverty industry?
Well, it can be. I mean, often what happens, like with that, so in a state like Oregon, where the state would be using Medicaid funds intended for the elderly and nursing homes instead of diverting those monies to pay for the public education system, that allows the state to reduce its budget outlay for the public education system. So it mainly just results in state fiscal savings. And
so a shell game, in essence.
Doesn't have to raise revenue, you know, through other means. So they'll take Medicaid funds from this poor population, use it to fund the public education system. Meanwhile, the elderly and the nursing homes are languishing in poor care. But you're right, you know, that you can see it in other tie-ins to the education system. School children are often targeted as a revenue strategy. I describe an example out of New Jersey where for poor disabled school children, a school district can also claim school-based Medicaid from the federal government. That's a good thing. This is money that's supposed to be helping these children's greater needs for special education, disability-related needs and services. But what you see in New Jersey is the state actually forces all the school districts to work with a revenue contractor, private revenue contractor, to maximize the number of children who would be eligible for the school-based Medicaid and the amount of services, the amount of claims. Then, right in the Christie administration's budget, it shows that over 80% of the school-based Medicaid claims from the federal government intended for the poor disabled school children are instead diverted by the administration to general revenue, literally taking tens of millions from poor disabled school children every year.
We're speaking this morning with about the poverty industry, book by Daniel L. Hatcher. He just finished commenting on somehow how examples of how federal monies are not used for their purposes. When we come back, we'll explore more on this and talk about accountability and solutions to these problems. But first, let's continue urging you to become a member of our community radio station, your community radio station, KBOO.
Yes, and thank you, Dell, for renewal of membership from Portland. So, and we are ringing the bell because we want you to ring our bells, literally. This is our, fourth morning of the membership, fall membership drive, and we've been on track. We need to stay on track. That means we need to hear from you. You know, for just $6.25 a month, yes, I did figure out the math eventually, you can get a copy of this book, The Poverty Industry, The Exploitation of America's Most Vulnerable Citizens, by Daniel Hatcher, who you've been listening to. That's just $6.25 a month. I think that's really doable for a lot of you out there. Maybe some of you have been in the poverty industry. There was a period in my life when I was on aid to dependent children for 6 months for my first daughter. It's no fun being ground out from the poverty industry, and it's no fun being in the poverty, being poor. And there may be some of you out there who grew up poor. I know, like, I grew up putting cardboard in the shoe when the hole got through it because I only got one pair of good shoes per year. If you're one of those people who came out of poverty and you're now being able to make it, maybe you're not rich, but you're being able to support yourself, support your kids, take a minute right now to support the radio station that brings the true information to you about what goes on in our society. Everything from this poverty industry to our military, to the political parties, all of that. We bring you that. You get it in one easy, let's go to KBOO on my radio dial 90.7, or if you're doing it on your computer, kboo.fm. Take a moment to appreciate that and get this book and learn. You always knew that there was fishy stuff behind the scenes, and you're made to feel guilty about taking money when you are poor, even though it probably came directly out of your tax dollars or your parents or your sisters or your brothers. Please take a moment right now to have some dollars come out of your account monthly. With $6.25 a month, we'd just take that straight out of your checking account, or you can do it for out of a credit card, either way that works best for you.
So easy.
Yeah, it actually is really easy to do, and it gives you a stake in this station. And I know that that made me think about steak the food. Somehow poverty's got me hungry, so when I said that, it gives you... But what it really does is it makes you part of KBOO in a different way. And I'll be honest with you, you feel different about the station when you know that you own it. And you do own it. The members here are who owns this station.
You know, you listen to the show, I'm sure you're a regular listener, you listen to Cecil and Celeste, and, you know, we call it, it's their show, but it's not their show. It's your show. It's our show, right? This is our community. And even though they too are just volunteers who, you know, do all this work to bring you this amazing, you know, coverage of these types of issues, they are here to bring this to you. You know, they are here to support the community. And in turn, why don't you show how much you appreciate everything that KBOO is bringing to you? You know, 80% of KBOO's annual budget comes from its members. So, you know, we're not ones getting huge government funding, which apparently government funding, if you're listening right now, is not all that it's cracked up to be. You know, we are supported by the members, and we love that here at KBOO, that it's you who is literally keeping us on the air. So give us a call at 877-500-5266. We got people waiting to take your call, or go online to kboo.fm and hit that donate button. But we love when you guys give us a call here. We get to talk to you at 877-500-5266.
You know, Jenna, I also love it when people come down here, and I say that, and people do come down. So I'm hoping you're one of those people who's hearing my voice and you think, well, I can drop off my donation. We're at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue. We're just a half a block south of Burnside on Southeast 8th. Great big mural out front. I don't know if it's not 9 o'clock. The doors aren't open yet, but if you came to the door and knocked, our airman and the engineer in there can see you, and he can let that door open, and we can take you around, give you a cup of coffee, show you all our production studios. This is really a grassroots and your station, and we love it when you come down with your pennies, nickels, and dollars to become a member of KBOO. You could come with your checkbook on your bicycle as well. We have good bicycle. We still maintain our own public bicycle.
No,
stands out there. You don't have to pay money to ride an orange one to come here. Please take a moment right now. You know, Cecil and Celeste have been on this station for a few years, and they've built up a really real audience out there who knows that if they turn to them, they're going to hear about social, political, and spiritual issues. If you're one of those who regularly turns in to hear Cecil and Celeste every Monday morning, please make sure you take this moment to become a member, because your membership will say, yes, I love that show. That's how we do it here at KBOO. We ask you to try to, you know, you could call in tomorrow or you could have called in last week. But if you haven't made your pledge now, call in this minute if this is a show you want to show support for. And since you're listening, I kind of think you do.
Exactly.
It's easy to do. It's 877-500-5266. We have people here filling out the forms with you over the phone. It takes maybe 2-3 minutes, unless you want to chat with them a little bit. And I am suggesting that you get a copy of this book. Get it for yourself. Get it as a gift. It's The Poverty Industry, the Exploitation of America's Most Vulnerable Citizens.
Daniel Know Where Your L. Money
Hatcher,
Goes.
The author. Yeah. And I love that someone is focusing on our most vulnerable citizens, because I've been vulnerable at times, and now I'm strong. If you're strong out there or vulnerable, take a moment to show your support for the exposure that you get on issues like this. It's only $6.25 a month if you put it on your credit card or on your bank account. That's $75 minimum pledge. You can pay it all up front or do it, you know, as a monthly transfer. We love those.
They love our sustaining members.
Yeah, it makes it easy for us to know we can pay our bills this month with that dollar.
Exactly.
So please take a moment right now. It's 877-500-5266. We're going to go back to Cecil and Celeste, but our phone answers will still be here. We want to hear lots of ring, 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 ringing.
And we are continuing our conversation, Celeste Carey and I am Cecil Prescott, with Daniel Hatcher, author of The Poverty Industry, The Exploitation of America's Most Vulnerable Citizens. When we left our conversation, Mr. Hatcher was explaining examples of how vulnerable populations are at risk because of practices by government agencies in an effort to raise revenue and to secure finances for all the obligations that the government should be responsible for. I also wanted to, another example you talk about that interests me in your book was about debtor prisons.
Yes.
And how that is used as a revenue source.
Sure. So the idea, unfortunately, of debtor prisons is these were outlawed, you know, many, many, many years ago, but you're seeing their return in our district courts, our lower level courts across the country that are often used for debt collection practices. So many times you can have a low income litigant who's involved in a court system, either on a small civil fine or sometimes a small fine resulting from a misdemeanor criminal infraction. And it might start with just a few $100 fine, but then it adds up very quickly with the court adding fines on top of fines and additional fees. Often the court systems then in our country are turning to, again, private revenue companies, in this case experts at collection, who will help the courts pursue these debts. And in the process of doing that, those collection agencies will tack on much money on top of the already existing debt, upwards to 30% sometimes on top of the existing debt. And then more fees happen. If a license is suspended because of the unpaid debt, there's a fee on top of the suspension because of the suspension. I saw an example out of a county in Oregon where there's even a fee if someone is, there is a process if you're so poor that you can seek a waiver, but there's a fee that you have to pay in order to seek the waiver because you're too poor to pay the fee, right? You know, so it becomes nonsensical. And then what you have is you have some courts will even incarcerate individuals if they're too poor to pay the fees.
And when they're incarcerated, what kinds of terms do they serve, if you know? And are they used then as part of the government-subsidized prison industrial labor complex where they're making goods or doing services for private industry?
Right. Great questions. And, you know, state by state, county by county, this varies, you know, first, you know, in those instances where the individual is incarcerated, it's nonsensical at best. You know, I think it's unconstitutional because of the state constitutions banning debtor prisons. But, you know, if the incentive, if the motive of the county court system is to make money, right, is to bring in funds, they're going to be spending much, much more in the process of incarcerating an individual than they would ever collect from a low-income litigant. And there are some studies out that I discuss in the book that have looked at that. But you're also right that this then connects to, you know, the prison industrial complex. We have many of our prisons across the country that are run by private companies. And many counties rely so much on the revenue that come from these prisons, you know, right, sometimes as almost the largest source of revenue coming to some counties in our country. So it's concerning, you know, in terms of how all this is interrelated. And some of the same people that are involved in these debtor prison strategies then are also connected to some of the other strategies. You know, this might have been a former foster child who's struggling to make a transition to independence, who's then encountered the criminal justice system, which is all too common, unfortunately, for a former foster youth. Then there's a court fine tagged onto it, right? So he or she becomes involved in the debtor prison strategy. He's often can be involved in child support, both by it might be a foster child who had his or her child support taken while he was in foster care, because the state will take child support from children as well when they're in foster care. And then if it's a young non-custodial parent who's had a child themselves soon after foster care, or even during foster care, the state will then pursue that individual, you know, that child for foster care to pay support, again, that's taken from the children. So it just becomes a crazy cyclical structure that can be impossible to break out of. There's just barrier after barrier after barrier.
I'm wondering if there is, if it's designed to be, if it's designed for a person to break out, because it sounds like, once again, finding new sources of free or cheap labor, and that may not have been the deliberate end, but it most certainly sounds like there's nothing stopping it from becoming the end. In terms of the ordinary person, as you mentioned, trying to break free from this cycle, have there grown up any advocacy agencies that are recognizing this information that you are promoting and are working to help individuals, especially children, break free of this cycle?
There is starting to be a growing, and there has long been, you know, an advocacy community that is focused on poverty-related issues, trying to help those of us who are struggling the most, you know, including foster children and disability advocates and advocates for the elderly, advocates for low-income families. Regarding these practices of the state revenue schemes where the money is diverted, much of this much of the public has been unaware of these practices for years. So I'm hopeful that with increased awareness, you know, that's key. You know, we need to be aware of the problem before we can start fixing a problem. So with increased awareness, hopefully we can start moving towards needed change. And if you just take the example that we discussed earlier about foster children and how foster care agencies are actually taking the children's disability and survivor benefits and veterans assistance benefits, I have worked with advocates and a particular member of Congress out of Illinois, Danny Davis, who's introduced a federal bill that would protect foster children's benefits to make sure that the children's own resources are actually used by those children to help themselves, you know, which seems obvious, but, you know, we have to stop the state agencies from taking the kids' money.
So it seems to me that this trend and these examples that you give in terms of how government funds its operation is based on political and economic theories around how government should work, the relationship between state and federal government, and in terms of accountability. Is this part of an overarching economic philosophy in terms of the role of federal and state government?
I think that's a very interesting question, and at least in part, I think yes. So one of the economic structures on which much of our aid, many of our aid programs are structured in our country is called fiscal federalism. And that's a partnership between the federal government and the states to provide services for low-income populations. Medicaid is the largest example of that, where you have the Medicaid programs are run at the state level, but most of the money comes from the federal government. So the federal government has its financial power to raise more revenue across the country. The argument is that by many people who think these services should be provided at the more local level is that if you get to the state level or the county level, then the government is more aware of the local needs and services. And, you know, I think that makes some sense. But where you see the system failing is where, you again, you have at these more local levels, states, and even more so at counties, unwilling to raise enough revenue through general taxation or other general means like that that are fair and equitable. So instead, they're taking money from other sources, often taking money from vulnerable populations and using them for unintended purposes. I mean, it's striking. I talk about an example out of New Hampshire, where right on their general budget line items, you know, one of the key sources of general revenue for the state of New Hampshire for years was taking Medicaid. And this, they called it Medicaid enhancement revenue. In the first year in which the state started doing this, it amounted to, I believe, upwards of almost 28% of the state's total general revenue.
That's kind of, that's stunning. That's
it
little,
is.
It's
and
just
we're
stunning.
Billions of dollars across the country that are, that, and you know, if I'm going to say there's a bad actor, you know, in terms of the most responsible for these practices, it's the states. States and counties, you know, some states more is happening at the county level than at the state level. But largely the federal government is trying to provide this source of aid and trying to monitor it. You know, sometimes it could be doing a much better job, but it's really at the state level where the government's, because they're unwilling to raise sufficient revenue how it is needed in a fair and equitable way, they're taking money from other sources. And most people have no idea this is occurring.
So let me go back to something that you're saying, and I want to plant this thought before we go to our break. You're saying that states are going to are allowing the money to be siphoned or are deliberately siphoning money off, and it's not being they're not replacing the money by proper taxation. One of the issues that we're discussing here in Oregon is the fact that we don't have enough corporate tax being paid into our coffers. So is this siphoning strategy kind of the substitute? Is it filling the vacuum left by the funds that should be raised through proper corporate taxes?
I think that's a wonderful question, and I think often, unfortunately, yes, and you know, and there are other examples of the types of taxation or other means of raising revenue in a fair way that are not being pursued because the state or the county is using this these forms of illusory revenue strategies, using children and the poor. So yes, it's really concerning. And then, like, you have, you know, your example of the corporate tax rate, and if a state is unwilling to raise revenue that way, you have the companies that are involved in the poverty industry can sometimes benefit from the favorable tax treatment in a given state while they're helping the state increase federal aid or other forms of resources from the vulnerable that the state then takes from the vulnerable.
So basically, it's not just a shell game. We have people who are not paying their fair share, corporations not paying their fair share, and then the money from other, as you have pointed out, these are vulnerable populations. They're paying the brunt of this because politicians are not willing to do the honest thing, and that is charge the businesses that owe the money that they owe. So, given the fact that some of these are very high-profile businesses, why is it so difficult for the federal government to not see these big industries siphoning off this money? Is there a problem at the federal level then?
That's a great question as well, and there are wide ranging connections, right? You know, many of the companies that are doing work at the county level and with state governments also have contracts with the federal government. One of the examples that I write about in the book, which is the same company I mentioned earlier that has the contract in Maryland to help the Maryland State Foster Care Agency obtain resources, and then the state takes the resources from foster children. Maximus, I describe sort of a chain of events that happened regarding this company, and Maximus has had contracts in Oregon as well, where they had a contract, the company had a contract with the District of Columbia to help Washington, D.C. maximize a form of Medicaid claiming related to foster children. And the company was ultimately pursued by the federal government and the District of Columbia government. Funds. The company agreed to a settlement agreement, a deferred prosecution agreement, agreed to a payment back of upwards to $30 million, wow. I believe. And as part of the agreement, acknowledged making claims that weren't true, right? Within a very short time of that, so you have a settlement agreement from allegations of Medicaid fraud. Within a very short time of that, Maximus lands a contract with the state of New York to help New York run its Medicaid fraud program. Right, and then the company continues a contract with the District of Columbia, which was the very same revenue maximization contract. Within a very short time of that, we're talking just months, the Maximus continues or begins new contracts with the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services, the federal agency to whom which the alleged fraudulent Medicaid claims were submitted. Right, so contracts with the federal government. Then, we're still not done, within a very short time of that, Maximus lands a contract with the Department of Justice itself. So yes, yeah. I mean, the industry, there's interconnections going everywhere. And you have companies that help first service providers, could be hospitals, claim state Medicaid payments from the states. The companies may then work for the states to reduce payout of those same dollars. The companies will work with the states to increase claims for the Medicaid from the federal government. And then revenue contractors, some of the same types of companies, may have contracts with the federal government to reduce payout to the states. So they're making money coming and going.
We're speaking this morning with Daniel L. Hatcher, and I've just looked at Maximus.
Mm-hmm.
Website, and their commitment to serving the people, they say, is boundless.
I'm sure it is.
Our commitment at KBOO, working with you to create a new world, is boundless. But we need your involvement, and by becoming and retaining and becoming a active participant here at KBOO, let's hear a little bit more about that, and then we'll come back and conclude our conversation with Mr. Hatcher with some possible solutions.
That's right. If you would like to become an active member, become an active member of the society, and you know, when you're listening to KBOO, you think, wow, listen to this show. Listen to all this really in-depth discussion about, I mean, I look at this. I'm even just like flustered with my own words because there's so much that just gets discussed about this one book about the poverty industry and just really how many people within our community that it affects. You know, when we're talking about the poverty industry, we're talking about families. You know, we're talking about children. We're talking about the disabled. We're talking about poor. We're talking about every single aspect of society and just how important it is to talk about where federal funding is going, where our dollars are going, and how we are taking care of our community. You know, so if you appreciate the discussion that's happening right now, give us a call at 877-500-5266 because only here in KBOO are you going to find this type of discussion. People are willing to ask these types of questions and really say, this is what's happening. This is what's happening in your community. This is what's happening in your society. Be aware. So give us a call, 877-500-5266. Show your support. Show how much you believe in KBOO and how much you believe in community radio.
That's right. And you can really make a difference with your dollars when you give them to KBOO. That's the way that you get to hear about these kinds of books. And I want to thank Leah, a renewing member, and Allison from Oregon City, also a renewing member. Thank you both for calling in during this hour. I'm inviting people who have wondered about the poverty industry. They've wondered, is there fraud and where is that fraud? You know, a lot of people tend to want to focus on the recipients of aid. Mm-hmm. Maybe that child that has spina bifida in their house and their parent is taking too much money for nursing assistance or something. People want to focus on the individuals receiving services instead of look at this whole industry I didn't even know existed, trying to figure out and make new laws and new rules just to make more money off the poor. And you know, when you don't have enough money, maybe you can't work anymore and you're only on disability, I want you to know you don't get enough money to live in an easy or even a basically healthy way. So I think this article is really important because here's all this misspent dollars, but the people who really need it are not getting it. It's an important mm-hmm. book. It's called The Poverty Industry, The Exploitation of America's Most Vulnerable Citizens. It's from Daniel L. Hatcher. You can get this book for a minimum $75 pledge. That's just $6.25 a month. And actually, if you're up to giving, $150, give $150, and then get two books. Ask for two books and give one to a friend of yours. Maybe you have friends who don't really understand how difficult it can be just to be poor, exactly. to trying to get out of the hole that you're in. Give them this book as education. Give it to yourself as education. I'm learning so much from it this morning. But please, however you do it, take a moment right now. Make those phones ring. We really do need to hear from you. It's 877-500-5266.
And you're listening to More Talk Radio. I am Cecil Prescott.
I am Celeste Carey, and this is your Community Connection, KBOO Portland.
We're continuing our conversation with Daniel L. Hatcher, author of The Poverty Industry, The Exploitation of America's Most Vulnerable Citizens. Mr. Hatcher is a professor of law at the University of Baltimore. We are in the midst of a political election season, and people throughout the nations are considering candidates for federal, state, and local offices. From your vantage point, Mr. Hatcher, are we having thorough, in-depth, meaningful conversations about this, or is it something that is off the political, it's not a concern in most political discussions?
I would like to see much more discussion regarding poverty and barriers impacting our vulnerable populations from both major parties and from independents, from everyone. I do think that it has not been discussed nearly enough. That said, where I'm seeing some of the concerns coming in the current political process there are some examples of proposals, including from House Speaker Paul Ryan. Donald Trump on his website wants to block grant the Medicaid program, and Ryan has suggested similar block grant proposals of federal aid. And essentially what this would do with block grant proposals is the idea is, well, let's just take all the federal aid and just give the money to the states or the even more local level and let them do whatever they want, give them all this flexibility, and they just use the money to help the poor because they're closer to their citizens to know what the low-income individuals need and their constituencies. And I get that argument, if a state is closer to their state citizens, then maybe they can know better. The striking concern is, what I'm talking about through the book, if you have a state governor that is right now under a structure where the governor is claiming federal aid, federal Medicaid funds intended to help the poor, and he or she is engaging in illusory mechanisms to claim that aid under a regulatory structure, you know, finding shell games to do it. And then diverting that money sort of behind the scenes, what's that governor going to do if you just hand he or she a blank check and say, please
thank
help
you.
The poor, right? You know, it's a huge concern. If you give money like that in a block grant to a cash-strapped state, you're going to lead to much more misuse of the aid and much more harm to the vulnerable populations.
It seems to me that part of the challenge really is not just establishing some process to properly account for the money and how it's spent and making sure it doesn't get siphoned off by needless little channels, but the problem really is whatever type of arrangements are made at both the federal and state level that allow these consultants to come in and retool these diversions, retool the funds. It's these organizations being allowed to do this and the feds not doing anything about it. Because as you pointed out earlier when I asked, well, what kind of high-level collusion is it? It's not as though the feds are not aware of this. It almost seems like it's a rite of passage for states to be able to siphon money from these to pay bills because they're doing favors for their friends. This vacuum wouldn't be there if they were charging proper corporate tax and proper tax on higher income earners.
Well, I write in the book about all these examples of the revolving door that unfortunately exists in the poverty industry, and also examples of pay-to-play activities. So yes, it is a concern when you have state government and federal government leaders that will go in and out of government leadership roles and then into positions with these private companies that are involved in the poverty industry. There's significant concern, and I agree. I have much concern about a lot of the practices that you're seeing from the private companies involved, and some of the language that I've seen in these contracts, you know, where you see foster children, again, you know, treated as revenue sources, right? It's concerning, but ultimately at the end of the day, you know, I have a lot of concerns with what the companies are doing, but I have more concerns with what the state agents, the state government leaders are doing, the heads of our state agencies, our governors. They're the ones who are ultimately deciding what to do with the money once the companies help them claim it, right? So the governor of Maryland right now could even work with Maximus to increase the aid, disability benefits and survivor benefits intended to help foster children. And then the governor could decide we're not going to take the kids' money. We're going to use the children's funds to actually help the children as intended. So I think the higher responsibility lies with our state government leaders, but you need to see improvement across the board without a doubt.
So given that, what are some of the suggestions that you would offer since we're here in the state and we as citizens might have a better view? What should we be doing? Who should we appeal to?
Sure. Well, and there's multiple layers to answering that depending on the type of aid that we're discussing and the type of revenue issues that we're discussing. One of the current possibilities to have significant improvement for foster children is there's a federal bill that's just been introduced, what I mentioned before, and it's H.R. 5737. It's titled Protecting Foster Youth Resources to Promote Self-Sufficiency. And that was introduced by Congressman Danny Davis out of Illinois. Were that enacted, it would stop state agencies from taking the money from foster children, and the children's own funds could then be conserved to help them as they transition out of care. And you know, this isn't just theoretical. I mean, foster children, unfortunately, in our country they're facing drastic hardships when they're in care, but then when they age out, it can be even worse. You know, foster children suffer from post-traumatic stress disorder at twice the level of Iraq war veterans in our country. And these kids, when they age out of care, they're so likely to become involved in the criminal justice system. They're likely to become homeless or on the forms of public assistance themselves. So some of the comments that were made earlier, you know, during the break on the show, I really liked in terms of, you know, we're all vulnerable, and I agree with that. We're all vulnerable. We're all interconnected. So we need to remember that when a foster child is harmed, it harms all of us, and not just from a moral perspective or from the heart, which matters a lot to me, but from a financial perspective. You know, when a child ages out of foster care and struggles, ends up involved in the criminal justice system or ends up homeless, we all pay the cost. So I hope we can increase our awareness of the need to be connected. And I know it sounds a little vague, but I think with increased awareness, then we can start moving for needed change. Regarding Medicaid, there's a whole host of improvements that can happen, and many of those could happen at the agency level. You know, the federal agencies could clarify the regulations right now and make it clear that basically the simple way to describe it is Medicaid funds are intended to be used for Medicaid purposes, right? You know, it's not complicated. So that's my hope. And I do think, like, the politics regarding all this are difficult. You know, across the country, people care deeply about their viewpoints, and rightly so. And I think it's good to have discourse and disagreement about the best way to help or provide services for vulnerable populations. You know, I think that's a good thing. That's what our country is all about, is having those discussions. I hope, though, that we can all agree that when you have a source of aid or a program that's intended to help children of the poor, then that money should be used as intended.
Well, thank you so much, Mr. Hatcher. Before we go, we want to encourage our listeners to call in here. And perhaps you could say one thing why a forum like this is good to get your ideas out.
I think it's wonderful to have a forum like this, to have this discussion. Both the questions that you all ask help me to challenge my own thoughts and to think about, you know, not just broad-based solutions, but think about how they can be applied or thought of at a local level. And again, awareness is so important. You know, all these practices have been occurring for years because we don't know. So as your program helps to increase our awareness of these struggles, of these problems, of the misuse of aid, then we can hopefully start to fix the problems. But we have to know about the problems first.
Thank you so very, very much. And to find out more about this book, you can receive a book by calling in, becoming a member, 877-500-5266. And for a donation of $75, you may have a copy of The Poverty Industry by Daniel L. Hatcher.
That's right. And I'm here. This is Linda. I'm here in Membership Central. And I wanted to let you know we've got a couple books left. They only gave a limited number of books. They were very generous with that. But we've only got a couple books left. For $6.25 a month, that could be you getting one of those books. And it just takes two of you for making our goal this time, this hour. We're very close to our goal. We only need two of you at the $6.25 a month. It's 877-500-5266. Call in right now. Show your appreciation for the programming that brought you this wonderful, I think he's been a great guest, Daniel Hatcher, and his book, The Poverty Industry, is so important. It's the exploitation of America's most vulnerable citizens. Show your support for the programming you're getting this from, which is Cecil and Celeste, Morning Talk Radio. You know, you can make the difference. We want two of you at $6.25 a month. That's $75 a year. I'm sure that there are you out there who can do that.
Oh yeah, I mean, $6.25 a month is, you know, for most of us, it's a very, very fancy cup of coffee that maybe you might treat ourselves to, you know, once a month. And why not treat yourself to being part of the KBOO family, part of the KBOO community? You know, if you're listening to a show like More Talk Radio, that means that, you know, you want the more in-depth discussion. And in this last part of the show, what I really liked was they were talking about, yeah, you know, here's the exploitation of these federal dollars, but what can we do as action steps? And that's one thing I really love about public affairs programming here at KBOO is it's not just about bringing you information. It's also about bringing you information about how you can participate in the community.
Inspiring you to take action. Maybe you wanted to take action on that issue. We wanted to inspire you to take that action. Do it right now, like the phone you heard ringing behind you, 877- 877- 800-500-5266. You can make a difference. We want to reach our goal for this hour. Let's go for it. We only hit, another caller will make it go over. So please do.
Oh my gosh, we are so close.
You know, if you're on your smartphone, if you're riding your bicycle, hop down for a minute. When I'm on my bike, when I'm walking, I've been using my smartphone to listen to KBOO. It's a really easy and great way to do it with the KBOO app. Take a moment right now. Show your support for KBOO. Get a copy of The Poverty Industry for just $75 a year or $625 a month. You're the person who can make the difference. Each one of you individually becomes one great difference-making machine called KBOO.
Give us a call, 877-500-5266. That's 877-500-5266. Or you can go online to kboo.fm. Hit that little donate button we got up in the corner. It's so easy. It only takes a couple minutes to sign up. And so join KBOO today. Become a member.
Good morning. It is 9 o'clock. This is KBOO Portland.
KBOO would like to thank our community partners that donated food for our volunteers today. Breakfast was provided by Bread and Ink Cafe, a breakfast and brunch venue located at 3610 Southeast Hawthorne Boulevard. Lunch was provided by Frank's Noodle House, whose specialty is La Mian, or Chinese hand-pulled noodles, and are located at 822 Northeast Broadway Street. Dinner was provided by New Taste of India, a food cart at 1810 Southwest 4th Avenue, serving North Indian dishes including lamb, chicken, and vegetarian choices.
You are listening to KBOO Portland. The time is just coming on 9 o'clock. Up next is the Old Mole Variety Hour. This KBOO program has been made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Portland 5. Presenting The Trump Card, a breakdown of what makes Trump tick by storyteller Mike Daisy. Daisy tells Trump's story from his earliest days, tracking him as he makes himself into a new American archetype. The Trump Card takes place September 25th at the Newmark Theater. Tickets and information are available at portland5.com.
Wish I was a mole in the ground. 'Cause if I was a mole in the ground, I'd tear those mountains down.
Good morning. This is KBOO 90.7 FM here in Portland and the Old Mole Variety Hour. I'm Jan Hawken, your host for today, along with Joe Clement, who is engineering. In addition to the guests coming onto the Old Mole this morning, you will be hearing about some of the behind-the-scenes